final hour. Darren Donica Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Wednesday afternoon. Kind of a gray overcast day. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Don't forget to enter our uniform drawing contest, a chance for you to win a jersey from the Preds, Nashville SC, Sounds, Vanderbilt Football, or MTSU Basketball. You can download a jersey template from thegamenashville.com and draw your own and submit your chance to win. Game listeners will then vote on the top three uniforms from each category, which is hockey, soccer, football, basketball, and baseball, with the winner getting a jersey from that sport. Enter today at thegamenashville.com. Have you had a chance to see some of the renderings that people have been submitting, Chase?
I have, and there are a lot of creative people out there. And,
yeah.
You know, we've seen some tweets from people over time of their photo editing skills or drawing skills, but now people are putting it all together with this jersey contest. So I like the creativity. It's been a lot of fun, and this is something different that we can do during this time. So I've enjoyed some of the designs.
Well, we have poked a lot of fun at your athletic ability or lack of, but you are very good on the creative side of things like that, doing the backdrops on Zoom or, you know, something like this, putting together uniform. I've seen some other stuff you've done, so you've always been good on that side of things. So while we tear down, we also build up on this program. There we go.
Thank you.
Let's bring in Chris Mason every Wednesday. At this time, he is driven by Freeland Chevrolet. He's also brought to you by Smoky Mountaintops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. You can visit SmokyMountaintops.com. Chris, what's up?
Not too much. Just obviously staying close to home and enjoying. It's actually turned out to be a nice day. I thought it was going to be raining all day, but it's kind of nice.
Is the sun out at your house?
It's not out, but
okay.
It's not. Really, it's behind clouds, but it's not really cloudy, if you know
okay.
what I mean. So it's not too dark. It's not bad. It's not bad.
It's just been gray and overcast here all day. So I was just
yeah.
curious. Maybe sun was heading my way. We learned last hour that Mike Fisher is a good, really good golfer, according to Tim Hasselbeck. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I am not a golfer. I actually gave up golf when my first daughter was born. And I haven't really golfed. I've golfed in some charity tournaments, some scrambles and things like that, but I don't think I've golfed one round in over 13 years.
Oh, wow.
I might have done one with my dad. But yeah, I haven't golfed, so I'm not on the golf scene, so I didn't know, but you know what, that wouldn't surprise me to hear Mike's a good golfer.
So Brent Still at Vanderbilt Legends, you just drive people around and tell stories? What do you – I thought you played, no?
No, I used to play. I just – you know what? When I played – because I was playing hockey still, and we travel all year round, and I just felt that was a sport that was tough to justify going out for 6 hours, in the summertime when the kids were at home, and I just never picked it back up. I found other stuff to do. Athletically, and yeah, just golf wasn't in the cards for me. It's
Ooh.
Fun. I enjoy doing it. I love getting out with the guys, you know, and doing it when I used to do it, but for whatever reason I just never picked it up. It's a process. It's a full day.
Oh, there's no doubt.
It's an expensive sport. It takes a long time, and you know, here, like today would be actually a perfect day for golf for me.
And it's a mental mind, you know, I probably can't use some of the words I'd like to use. Like, it can beat you up mentally. It can beat you up mentally if
yeah,
you play 18.
Four. A lot of four.
in my
game, especially now. It's, yeah, it could be a couple fairways over at times. So, yeah, that's chasing balls around for 4 hours isn't that much fun to me anymore.
Who was the best golfer you saw that you played with?
My best buddy, he's a coach for Colorado Avalanche's farm team, Ryan Tobler. He still golfs. He golfs all the time. He's a scratch golfer. And he's a big, he's one of these 6'4", he was an enforcer, pretty good player too. He got like 45 points, I think, the year that we played Milwaukee together. And, you know, you think this guy's going to be like this massive big ball hitter, but he just down the pipe every time. You know, he's one of those guys, sometimes he'll play the iron or his, you know, 3-wood off the tee, but he's just doesn't miss. And it's impressive to watch those kind of guys play the game, especially when, you know, I'm below average at best, to play with people like that just don't miss and just play. Like, you know, and it's guys like me or guys that don't play a lot, you know, I'm happy if I get like 2 drives in the fairway, you know, you crush it down there and like, oh, yeah, you know, that's nailed nice. That one. And then all of a sudden my next one's in the water or the bushes, but I got that drive in.
Oh, there's always a handful of shots that I feel like I belong on the tour. It's the other 170 shots that I tend to forget about.
Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. Maybe we should go out golfing together.
Well, I was going to say, if you really want to feel a little bit better about this conversation, I think the four of us, there's your foursome. You'll feel better about your game playing with the three of us.
That'd be some good social media content too. We're looking for stuff to do, so I mean that's a good social distancing activity as far as I'm concerned. You never have to, you know, you can definitely take the precaution golfing.
Oh, we probably could find a viral video in there somewhere.
Oh yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that for sure. We've got a really cool thing that we're gonna unveil next week on the show. In fact, it's going to be during our show, and it's going to be the end of next week. We're going to go down memory lane of that 2016-2017 playoff run, and in particular focus a little bit more heavy on Game 6 of the Western Conference Final. And it's been really interesting. The three of us have been able to catch up with players involved in that. And I did a Zoom interview with Ryan Johansson yesterday, a long one with him, and just recalling that whole run. I did one with Colton Sissons on Friday. I know Willie has jumped in there. We've been doing the chase, and I just want to know, if you, what's unique to me is think about that's 2017. There's been a whole lot of hockey played, and that where were you in, if we, and I know we've done a little bit of this with you over the years, but how much were you and like remembering the finer details of games, moments in your career? Was that easy for you? Was that tougher for you to kind of recollect of certain things that happened in your playing career? How would you answer that?
Yeah, I don't remember a lot unless somebody jogs my memory. I think when you play, and you know, for me anyway, you're when you're in the game, you're just so in that moment. It's just, it's all encompassing. And after it's, you know, after the game's done, you gotta redo that again 2 days later and just get fully invested and focused on that game. And you do it over and over and over and over again. And obviously there's, you know, some pinnacle moments or plays or games that you might hang on to and you might remember and you can, you know, recall and just like you were there yesterday type of thing. But for that game, for me, I wasn't even a player. That's a game that I can vividly remember. And I have a little bit of a unique perspective in that because I wasn't in the building the whole time. I was in the truck taking clips, with Lindsay and all of our crew, in the truck doing that. And I was going inside to catch a little bit of the atmosphere as running in, and we'd go up, and Crispy was inside for most of the game. So I'd go meet Crispy in there. I'd watch there for a bit, go back out to the truck and log clips because I was doing the post game show on the plaza. And so I remember the game, you know, I was just like everybody, probably all of us. I was really nervous because of the situation. It was just such a war. And I felt, oh my God, they came so far and there's no Johansson. There's no, Fisher, and you know, these guys are just fighting for their lives. And, you know, just the way that Pekka played, Colton Sisson, and at the end of the game, I was outside with Lindsay getting ready to go on and Crispy. And when they won, and you know, it's obviously a delayed reaction, on the plaza, it's a few seconds delay. And so I was out there on the desk ready to, you know, to go and do the post game show. And, it was one of, you know, the greatest moments in sports that I've ever had. And, you know, I wasn't even playing. So it was probably my favorite, I think, in terms of the emotion and just the experience of being outside with everybody and just the elation of all the fans coming out when we're on the post-game show, everyone cheering and chanting and screaming. And it was that was one that I, you know, I'm just thinking about it now. I can picture it perfectly, you know, how that game went down and the feeling that I had when it happened.
Ironically, I think one Pete Weber was just texting a picture to all of us this morning that should jog our memories of our time out in Anaheim.
Oh, that's right. That was a great day and night. Great night. Great ball game. And then we went and played darts in that. I don't know where. We went to a couple of shady spots, but we ended up with remember that? Remember those two guys that came in and they had their own, like,
suitcase of darts?
I think Willie and I almost beat them.
You guys came close.
We gave them a good run.
It was down to the wire. Like, it was the last number. I don't know if we had to get a bullseye or something, and they ended up beating us. But they brought their own darts to the place. And, oh, I wanted to win that dartboard so bad. But especially beat those guys. They're such cheese balls.
They're doing stretches, and they had their own little suitcase of darts. It's like,
man,
the world?
It was like
you guys
a punk
have sponsors?
Video. Yeah. Yeah, it felt like we were getting punk there for a minute. These guys walk into this little dive bar, and that was awesome.
The only
thing that kept it
from being a perfect night was that we didn't win the game of darts, and I'm still waiting for our songs to be played. We had a great playlist put in the jukebox for CDs, and the music never played.
Yeah, Willie's always on.
Any
place we go, Willie's usually the one that heads over to the jukebox or whatever they're called now and gets the playlist started off. And, it never played. I don't know if it was backed up or we never got them.
Well, it was a popular spot that night.
They took our money. They took our money.
Yeah, but, and our pride.
that's true. But we have stories to tell.
Hey, DW got quite an arm workout that night. I'll just leave it at that. Right, working those biceps. If you guys,
remember.
He
did. We all did.
Yes. Well, he was bringing them over to us, so I was.
Yeah,
he got
true.
A better
that's
workout
right.
than us.
Yeah, that's true.
We're talking to Chris Mason, and part of the story we're talking about the 2017 run. And while we're preparing our piece on specifically Game 6, the game that sends the Predators to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time ever. Fox Sports Tennessee, as you know, Mace, they're doing what they call the Golden Classics. They're showing all the wins every Tuesday and Thursday on Fox Sports Tennessee. And so they're now into round two. Last night was the Vern Fiddler game where he scores the big goal to break the tie late in the game to give Nashville the win in game one. You and I did our little reminiscing of that on social media. But one of the things that's so much fun, and we covered it a little bit in our piece, was the unlikely heroes that emerged during a Stanley Cup run. You can see the same thing developing in a lot of World Series films that you look in the past. You know, the guy that is the role player that all of a sudden is forever going to be remembered. So last night was Vern Fiddler. Thursday is going to be the Cody McLeod game. We already saw the Harry Zolnerchuk game. But that's the great part of a team, right, is when somebody like that makes a huge contribution. That's so much fun.
You know, it's honestly, that's why I just love team sports for that reason, is because you're all in it together. And you know when, you know, your star players, especially in a playoff series, that the focus is going to be on shutting them down, and they're going to get grinded down, they're going to get cheap shotted. And there's going to be games where, you know, no matter how hard they're playing or what they try to do to make an impact, you're up against the best checkers and you get shut down and you need those other guys. And that's why I love hockey is the players that have that will. And, you know, during the regular season, your job is to shut down the other top line, and you're not going to be, trying to make offensive plays and do those types of things, on a regular basis. It's going to happen every once in a while, and the league's kind of changing in that regard, I think. The skill level on the, third and fourth lines now, but in a playoff series, it's so tight and it's so close, and every play is the biggest play of the game, and you have those guys that just, they won't be denied, or just they get that opportunity, and they make that big play when the team needs it, because You know, your guys, your big dogs are getting shut down, and it's just, it's like you said, Willie, some of the guys just live in eternity because of those moments, and because of, you know, the way that they did it. They willed their way to make that play. They worked their butt off. They, you know, they made some, you know, that second, third, fourth effort type of a play to get in there and get that greasy goal or whatever. And, you know, from a source that's, you know, not likely to think of, you know, if you're going to pick who's going to score the winner, it's not going to be one of those guys. But the fact that, you know, a successful team, and like you said, it happens every year in the playoffs. There's always someone that is a storyline that's not, you know, the unexpected or the unlikely hero. And, you know, for Nashville's 2017 run, there were so many guys that stepped up and did that. And then those in that Blues series, you know, Cody McLeod, Vern Fiddler. You know Vern Fiddler. I played with the guy. He's one of the hardest working guys. He's give everything he has every single night, every single shift, that type of guy. And a lot of times it goes, you know, unnoticed on the broad scheme of things. But in those moments, in those big moments, when they make that one play, and that one play is a difference in the hockey game. It's the biggest difference in winning or losing, is to have those guys, the unlikely heroes, step up and make those plays. And that's what happened for Nashville. And it was, just really one of those things that I think the runs for now anyway, and I think even if they do win, this run will live on, you know, with infamy, just because of how special it was and the way this city got behind it. And it really changed, I think, this organization and the way people view Nashville forever. That's a really defining moment, I think, for this organization, obviously.
You know what's funny about the connection between Vern Fiddler, Cody McLeod, and Harry Zolnerchuk is all three of them were constantly being praised for their presence in the locker room. Peter Laviolette would often talk about how they were so good at making everybody laugh, saying the right thing at the right time, making everybody feel better about themselves. And the analytics can never, ever quantify that, and they would be the first to admit that. But there is a value for those guys on a team. That's kind of why they were there to begin with. And then, of course, you get the contribution, it's even better, that work ethic and that chipping in of the big secondary scoring. Who were the best? Like, we were talking about the Michael Jordan thing before, The Last Dance, and one of the dynamics that's emerged is Michael Jordan, he constantly is ribbing his teammates, but a lot of times it's not always in a great positive way. It's kind of in a mean way at sometimes, he explains his motivation for that. But it definitely can create an uncomfortable feeling. I'm sure you've played with both types of players, Mace, but give me some examples of some of the funniest guys who had that flair for being able to rib guys and create laughter and lighthearted moments in a locker room without crossing the line.
Yeah, you know what? Through all the teams I've played on, you do realize how important the balance is of that, to have both spectrums of those types of people. You need the people that are going to keep you accountable. That has to happen, because as a group, if you know, you can see a couple people going down a different path, or just a mentality, and it's a mental grind as well as a physical grind throughout, you know, an 82 game season and then plus playoffs. So you need those guys. They can't do it all the time, but they definitely are an essential part of having a successful team. There's no doubt about that. But on the flip side of that, you also need the guys that, hey, when things are a little tense and it's a little too nervous, or guys are a little too tight, you need those guys that are able to just, you know, just to break up that tension and just loosen it up and get the guys laughing and you know, in a, just a lighter frame of mind before you go out there. And Vern Fiddler was one of those guys. Scott Hartnell was, you know what, as he got older, he really found the balance of both. But I played him when he was younger, and he was one of those just kind of innocent, this kid-like, goofy kind of guy, always laughing, having fun, you know, that type of guy. And it was really contagious, because it just gets you and, you know, kind of sends a reminder to the team. You know, sometimes you're shaking your head, but it says, you know, it says to the team and to all the guys sitting around the locker room, you know what? We love hockey. This game is fun. Let's go out there and have fun instead of, like, you know, oh my God, this is the biggest game of the year. I'm gripping my stick. We can't make a mistake. To have those guys in the locker room. Hal Gill, well, we all know Skillsy. he was great at that. You know, he was great at, and he did it the right way. It wasn't out of context, and when there was time to be serious, because you know he's going to go out there and he's going to put his body on the line and he's going to take the lumps and he's going to, you know, stick up for his teammates and do whatever it takes. He played a tough game. And but in the locker room, he also was really good at reading the mood and the pulse of the guys and when the right time to, you know, kind of bring that level of seriousness down to, you know, to loosen the guys up. And I was really fortunate to play with a lot of great guys. Keith Tkachuk, I played with in St. Louis, was very good at that, of keeping it light, but also, you know, giving that constructive feedback and to the team and kind of, you know, verbalizing the game plan, but also, you know, keeping it light. I remember before the game, every game he'd go around and he'd say something positive to every guy on the team. And Manny Legacy, when he played, he never talked on game days. So Keith Tkachuk would go around and say, you know, hey, Mace, you know, we need you, you know, positive, getting the guys going on the bench, blah, 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 whatever. And he'd go around and T.J. Oshie, you're skilled, you're young, but you can go out there and make an impact. You know, he'd say something nice about everyone. He'd get to Manny Legacy, and he'd say, let's go, Manny, be a rock down there. You and I got to carry the team tonight. And obviously Manny wouldn't say anything back, so he would say, all right, Big Walt, yeah, you go too. You know, he'd be a leader out there, and he would say, you know, Manny's part for him, and it would kind of, all the guys would laugh, and he would do that every game before he went out. And it's just one of those things that just, you know, it just lightens the mood, and it just takes that level, that top layer of nerves and stress out of it for a little bit. So I played with a lot of guys like that, and it's fun. And it reminds you too that, hey, you know what, let's go have fun, let's go work our butts off and have fun. And you definitely need those characters
at the end of the day, mates. It's just a game.
That's
it. And you guys get paid for it, but it's still, that's what it is. Chris Mason is with us, and as we take the walk down memory lane, I've been using this downtime to organize and clean up, and I was going through some files of my old video camera, and I just tweeted out some pictures of Hal Gill from when he played with the Predators, and one of those was during the lockout when you guys were doing unofficial practices at A game, and that was actually the first time that we met, Mace, was during that time. But as you talk about those guys, and you mentioned Skillsy, and I'm trying to remember the group that was all there. I think Martin Erat was there, Mike Fisher, Shea Weber, Nick Spaulding, yourself, Hal, there were Paul Gostad. How fun was that? Because it was so laid back, and you guys were just trying to stay in shape and, you know, get ready for the season whenever the season started. But to have that kind of informal hangout, and this was your return to the organization. What was that like?
It was, you know, it's one of those things that it was great to come back to the city, and a lot of us had to get there because we had kids in school, and I think like Fish lived there obviously full year round, and Pekka was there for a little while until he went back to play. I think he went to Russia to play. But you know, it was fun. It was a great opportunity for me to get to know, you know, some of the new guys on the team, like Hal, and I knew Fish from our World Championships, but Gostad, and, you know, to be around a group like that where there's a lot of uncertainty. You know, lockouts suck. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They just flat out suck. They ruin the season, and I guess it's, you know, an essential part of, you know, I guess business moving forward and getting both sides happy with the agreement and all that kind of stuff. But like in the situation I talked before, you got to make the best of it. You got to, you know, you got to enjoy your time. You got to work hard. When you go on the ice, you know, we're out there, it's not like we're out there just cruising around. We're out there, you know, working our butts off because the season's going to start. And, you know, we had some older guys too. And you know, when those lockouts come, that they can be career enders. And it ended up being for me too. I was lucky enough to play as long as I did, but you know, but it was a good time to be like that. But at the same time, you want to get back and you want to play games. Like, you know, you made the comment, it's only a game. It is only a game. But when you're in the game, and ask Willie, if we're out playing pickleball or whatever, or playing darts against those two guys that were right out of a movie, those two cheese balls, it's not just a game. You want to win, and you want to do everything in your power to win. And you know, if you take the games away from an athlete, and it's not quite the same. But having said that, we did have a lot of fun in the camaraderie and the you know, the team building before the season is so important. And it was fun at A game, but, you know, that just kind of wore its course too. But, that's one of the things that I miss the most about the game is being in the locker room and doing those things and going the battle with the boys and having that dynamic too. But I got that now. I got that now with my broadcast crew too. So I got a way to fill that void.
If Chase would have said that to Michael Jordan, he may have gotten slapped for sure. I would back up if he said it's just a game.
Yeah, well,
Michael.
I was like that in practice. I had an edge to me that, you know, people don't see, but I had in order for me to make it to the NHL and to stay there, I had to have an edge. So every time I practiced, I tried as hard as I could every single day, and I really expected my teammates to do the same. And if they didn't, you know, I wasn't shy to say something and to, you know, make guys accountable. And even if it wasn't, you know, a popular thing, or it's not easy to do to have those conversations with your teammates. But in order, you know, to get the best out of your team and to give your team the best chance to win, especially on some of the teams that I played in, you needed everybody to be at their best, and you needed everybody on that team to do the same, whether it's your best players or your, you know, your role players or your backup goalie like I was or whatever. You have to have that to have any level of success. If it's winning championships, you need to have that. If it's a team that's maybe not a best team and to have them overachieve, you need to have that. And I respected guys that did both, and you need both. It's all about the balance.
Indeed it is. Appreciate the visit as always. Thanks for doing this. Have a great rest of your week.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, you do the same. You and the family continue to be safe. That's Chris Mason, driven by Freeland Chevrolet, also brought to you by Smoky Mountaintops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. You can visit SmokyMountaintops.com. More on the other side, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Darren Donick and Chase continues. Great conversation as always with Chris Mason. As we continue to move forward here on the show, as we mentioned earlier, tomorrow on the show we have our Friday afternoon trivia, so make sure you're ready for that. Predators coach John Hines will join us.
Tomorrow.
Elliot Friedman. I'm sorry. I'm getting my days mixed up like everybody is. I forgot this is Wednesday. I'm thinking it's Thursday.
I
but
know. I
so
can't keep
tomorrow,
up with it
Thursday,
I'll be okay
Elliot
if
Friedman
tomorrow's Friday.
And John
I'm
Hines. And Friday trivia will be on Friday, not
yes,
tomorrow. Friday trivia on Thursday. Okay. No,
that's like when they would do the Monday Night Football on Thursday and they would call it Monday Night Football Thursday Special Edition. Or I'm like, just call it Thursday Night Football. Like, this is stupid.
Oh, boy. Okay, what have
you
done?
Were saying.
I've opened up a can of worms.
Let me ask you guys this. Let me ask you something. We've talked so much about The Last Dance. If you guys, you don't, and I'm not saying you have to, not to be the director and be in charge, just suggest you come up with the subject. It's like the School of Rock. What is your role? This group right here, Summer and these other two girls, you're in charge of naming the band. If you were in charge of the subject matter for whatever it would be, 30 for 30, what would it be? Who would you want to see? And I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. Who would you want to see a documentary made about? A favorite sports athlete of yours. And take it anywhere you want.
Okay, so like this one is a little different. We're talking about 10 parts. So
and it doesn't
not
necessarily have to be
10 parts.
Right, it doesn't necessarily have to be 10 hours. But just something that you feel like would be a great, great story that you like. Because I love documentaries. I honestly, if when it comes to a movie, like Waco, like anything that's based on a true story, you always have my attention because there's a level of intrigue that goes up to me knowing that it's not just something drummed up by Hollywood. It's not just a cool storyline. It's something that actually happened, and I can learn more about this. Whether it's a tragic event or what have you, my ear, you know, my radar goes up and I have a higher interest level in something that was real. You know, is Ozark, did I enjoy Ozark? Yes, I love it. Am I all in on Peaky Blinders now as we discussed yesterday? Yes. But those aren't real. I really get into something that I know that has, you know, has real history behind it. Like, it actually happened, and I can learn more about the event. So that always gets me a little bit more interested. So, but there's got to be somebody that we, you know, whether you were a kid or as an adult, that's always had your interest level that you'd like to know even more about. You may know a lot about, but you'd like to know even more. I thought I knew a lot about Jordan. He was right in, you know, my wheelhouse, and Willie's too. But we learn things every episode. We didn't know everything about Michael Jordan. We're learning, you know, on the go. So how would you answer? Anybody want to step up there and try to begin this conversation?
I have an answer if you want me to go first.
Sure.
I mean, for me, because if I'm the one, because how I took the question is if you're directing it, that's just.
Well, you don't have to be the director. It's just, like I said, you could just be in charge of, here's who I want to see it on now. You guys go make it.
For me, it would be Dale Earnhardt Sr., and specifically more of the relationship that he had with Dale Jr. And their paths, and, you know, obviously Dale Sr.'s death and the effect that it had on Dale Jr. and his career moving forward. But that relationship between Dale Sr. and Dale Jr. would probably be the first one for me.
Hmm.
Because I think you could get a lot of stuff out of that.
There's been some type of stuff obviously done on Dale Earnhardt. How much has been done on Jr.?
Not a whole lot.
Right. Okay. That's why I'm asking, because I kind of feel like you, there's a lot of material out there that we haven't seen put out publicly, right?
He's very private.
But not really. He's very private, but not really.
Yeah, but see, and that's where I was going. And this is the better way to put it, he controls what gets out and what doesn't. Like, you, I mean,
well, most do.
Right, but it's, yeah, but it's very apparent with that. And he's been more open in later years. Like, he wasn't on social media for a long time. When he won his second Daytona 500, he made a bet with his crew chief that if he won the race, he'd get on Twitter, and he did. And for many people in the industry said that was a brilliant move for him because it connected him even more with his fans, and he was always good about that. And so now he's very active on social media, Twitter and Twitch. And, you know, he did a Twitch video the other day during the iRace that his daughter walked in the room and got in his lap. So it's that kind of stuff, but he hasn't always been that way. And especially when it comes to talking about, you know, his dad, and he's very selective on what he brings up and how much emotion he shows. And I just think if there's some sort of documentary on it, that would have been, I mean, that would be really cool, of their relationship and then how it affected Junior after his father's death.
I have to believe that something like that is down the pike. I'm not probably saying in the works, but down the pike at some point, right? Like, that has to get told, you would think.
Yeah, I would believe so, especially now that he's retired, that he can focus on that stuff. I mean, I understood, like, when he was racing. That's what he was doing. I mean, he was focused on racing, especially when things weren't going the way that everybody had planned when he first joined Hendrick Motorsports. And, you know, he met his now wife, Amy. I mean, he really started to change how he looked at things. But that's another part of it. That, I mean, you can say that the focus could be more Dale Jr., but I think there are a lot of...
If you took the Family Guys, as you say this, Chase, I think you could do 10 parts maybe on the Earnhardt family.
The relationship with his stepmom.
You could certainly get very close. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Well, you could probably do – if let's just take the format of the 10-part, the 10 hours, just because that's what we're all watching right now. I think especially as broad as Michael Jordan, but for racing fan circles, and I think you could probably get outside those circles some. You know, starting from the origin of Dale Earnhardt, and then, you know, you could have a couple of episodes alone on the fateful day that we all remember when Dale died, and all of the changes and adjustments and how the world changed after that. That's extremely compelling. And then, as you mentioned, Junior's career too, and how he was influenced by all that, how the sport was. That'd be some really good stuff.
Well, and it's also because I look at racing and I look at Dale Jr. and that's his life and that's his love and he's still involved in it. But think about how much the sport has taken from him. It's given him a lot, but I mean, his dad died doing it. He had to retire early because of an accident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just a lot of give and take with that industry, yet he still loves it. He loves going to Daytona. Daytona is his favorite track, his favorite place because of all the connections that he has to it, good and bad. I mean, it's, and so that type of thing is fascinating, but also the relationship with Teresa Earnhardt, Dale's wife, Dale Jr.'s stepmother, and how that soured and the fall of DEI, Dale Earnhardt Incorporated. I mean, there's all of that. The move, you know, in making the move to Hendrick. So I think a lot of people, and one moment that's always stood out to me with that relates to you guys, I remember, Darren, when we went to Daytona with Liz, we came back that Monday morning. I was producing the afternoon show at the time and wasn't really thinking much about that, okay, you guys would cover. I mean, obviously it would come up because we just got back from there. But I remember George opening the show, just asking you specifically the question of just, okay, Dale Earnhardt Jr. has won this race. This is, we all remember Dale Earnhardt Sr. How big of a deal is this? And that was the conversation around of, even though it was his second Daytona 500 win, it had been 10 years of just that connection that people have. They know Earnhardt. They hear the name Earnhardt, and they know who it is. So that kind of star power that Dale Jr. had, that's a moment that stands out to me because it wasn't, you know, I know George isn't a NASCAR fan. Willie, you're not either. And that's just the power that I think he had and still has.
But also imagine all of the places you could go if you had carte blanche to do so, about all the inner workings of the family dynamic, right? The different sure. factions and how they got along. I mean, it's quite compelling. And let's be honest, that's compelling, right? One of the teams, like I could think of some teams that I'd really love to sit back and watch how they were put together and all the memories on the court or on the field. Like, let's take the Spurs, right? I think it's a phenomenal sports story how great the Spurs were for such a long time. But let's be honest, there wasn't a lot of controversy. There wasn't
We don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, unless there was stuff going on behind the scenes
that we don't know. Sure.
The circus and the soap opera of the Bulls is part of the appeal of this documentary. Right? So I'm not sure it would fly, even though for a pure sports perspective, I'd love to watch and learn more about how all those teams and decisions were made, the greatness of George Popovich. I'm just not sure it would have a lot of pizzazz, you know? But the Earnhardt story's got everything.
Yep. Oh, I would be all in on that, for sure.
Yeah, even if you're not a...
Earnhardt, I would be all in on watching something like that. And that's one of those... where Junior can be a part of it. Like, I've got several racing through my – I mean, just – I can just start immediately thinking of things.
Yeah, well, I think the question is, like, who's untapped? Like, we've seen a lot of – this has been – ever since 30 for 30 came out, there's been a great run, whether it's ESPN doing it or HBO or some other outfit. They've all – even if it's specific to MLB Network or NFL Network or NHL Network, people have started to do these things, and they're really cool. So What have we not mined yet, right? What's untapped?
Here's two that I've got, and it's got to fall under the category of what we talked about. I think it was yesterday on the show of Ken Burns kind of questioning Michael Jordan having, you know, the host basically, or the subject having the control over, you know, the content. And so these two
have to fall. And by the way,
Darren,
Richard Deitch has a retort from the guy that did the movie or did the documentary. If people want to read that, it's pretty interesting because he's talked to Ken Burns about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Richard, who's the best at what he does in covering the media, put it out there. It's on The Athletic if people want to see it.
Very good. So I'm going to start with one that I think would be fascinating, but he can't be a part of it. He just can't. It's got to be everybody around him on this entire journey painting the picture. And I'm not saying it all has to be bad, but there's been a whole lot of good, as in winning and success, but there's also been a whole lot of controversy and a whole lot of, you know, craziness that we, you know, we would find out. And so I don't know how much he can be a part of it. Obviously, he can be a part of it, but he can't have control over the content. I would love to see a 30 for 30 on Rick Pitino.
Yes.
Like, you just think about his journey.
That's a good one, yeah.
You just think about his stops. You know, the decision to go to Kentucky when, you know, the way Eddie Sutton left the program. And the decision to leave Kentucky to go to the NBA and flop. You know, what's happened? I mean, it goes on and on. The scandals
at
Louisville.
You skip Providence in the
Providence,
Knicks.
Providence,
I mean,
yes.
He's got so many chapters distinctly different. That's a great one. Great idea.
I would love to see, but they have to be willing to talk to the right people and get the, you know, we need to know more about, you know, the restaurant and the scandal at Louisville. We need to know more about his time at Kentucky and, you know, the decision, you know, behind the scenes to go to the NBA and how much regret is there that he left Kentucky to go to the NBA and flop. He got paid, but it didn't work out in Boston. So I think that would be a fascinating documentary or a fascinating 30 for 30, but you'd have to have the right people to tell the story.
You know what's funny? When you were setting that up and doing the build-up to it, three people came to mind. Pitino was one of them, Pete Rose, and Urban Meyer, of how you couldn't let them control the narrative.
We've heard a lot about Pete Rose. There's been
But I'm just saying that those three popped in my head as you were doing your build-up.
Like, how much has been done on Pitino?
Not as much. No. But what has been done? Has anybody done the definitive Pete Rose going back through everything? I do think it's an interesting one. I don't think there's been a 30 for 30 on Pete Rose, has there, or an HBO one?
I don't think there's been a 30
for
30.
Well, what was the Pete Rose? We've learned a lot more in time. I think Pete Rose in trying to, you know, it was deny, deny, deny forever, and then it was like, okay, that didn't work. Okay, how about I just admit everything and tell a lot
but I'm
more?
Saying putting
maybe
it all
help.
Together. The beauty of a great documentary is you put it all together, right? That could be a 10-part series, the saga of Pete Rose, player, then player manager, then the scandal. Since then, you'd have plenty of material for 20 hours or for 10 hours of stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know if it's all been strung together. There's stuff that we forget. Right? That's what we find when we're watching The Last Dance is like, oh, I forgot about that. But that was a big thing at the time. But you maybe just hadn't thought about it in a few years. Like you just mentioned one part on the Pete Rose timeline where it really did look in the early part of the 2000s like he was making headway. And then all of a sudden here he comes with the book where he basically says, yeah, I did do it. Right? That moment. Right? There's all these bizarre moments in time where it looked like he might have been on a pathway to something and then screwed up and shot himself in the foot by doing something goofy.
That would be a good one. The other one, it can't be done now. It's got to be down the road later on. And Tom Brady and Bill Belichick can't be a part of it. But you got to do one on the almost two-decade run in the dynasty of the Patriots. Like
well,
that
got to be
that,
interviewed.
That's got to be down.
And really trying to delve into
walking the line, bending the rules, breaking the rules.
That's the charisma part. That's the colorful part of that goes with that dynasty. Unlike the Spurs or like the 80s 49ers where there's really no controversy.
Give me four people, your first four phone calls that you would make for that documentary.
Well, the equipment guy's got to be a part of that when you get to, Deflategate, right? I mean, that equipment guy who took the blame for, the guy just went rogue and just, please. I was down because of him. How about we hear the real story?
Floyd knows the guy's name. I can't remember, but he's always had that guy. Bill Belichick's always had that mad scientist who's always looking for loopholes in the rules. I can't remember his name. If you Google it, we can probably find it. But that guy would have to be a central character, right? You'd have to get him to talk, which I don't know if you'd ever do it and reveal the secrets. But a lot has been written about him, that behind-the-scenes guy that works for Belichick.
Yeah, see, the problem is, like for example, like David Falk could, you know, really tell us. He could have added to The Last Dance. You know what I mean? If he really could get – if he could really get – like David Falk, you know, has seen, heard. He's got a lot of stories to tell that he can't – you know, he's never going to tell, right? The longtime agent of Jordan. You know he could add perspective, but – you know, they've included him. It's been a nice gesture, but he doesn't represent Jordan anymore because Jordan's an, you know, once he got into ownership, you can't, he had to, I guess, break those ties. But he could tell a lot more than we know.
And I'm not the guy's name, I found it. The guy's name is Ernie Adams, is the guy that is sort of that behind the curtain guy for Bill Belichick. There's been a lot written about him, but nobody's really. You heard him tell the stories. That'd be a guy I'd want to look into for that. I'll give you one. I'll give the one I thought of, guys. I think we're far enough removed from it now. I would love to see a 30 for 30 on the steroid era in baseball with the Mitchell Report maybe being the centerpiece of it, trying to look at it now in a retrospective. You know, the whole – guys testifying in front of Congress, the whole Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens, and all of that stuff, how they figured out what to put in the Mitchell Report, how much is accurate. I would love to see that.
Yeah, that'd be
good.
How
the commissioner handled it. You know, what people knew when, you know, how much was going on, who knew, who wasn't saying anything that really did know. I would just love to know more about what was going on behind the scenes, you know, uncovering things that, you know, we've, I guess, little by little uncovered, but really going back and getting deep into it. That 97 through about 2003, 2004, you know, I don't know what you consider the beginning, the exact beginning and the exact end of the steroid era, but definitely through the Mitchell Report and on into where we have today, which is more extensive testing.
I think that would be a good one. And I don't want it to make like the one on the Patriots. It's a balance of both. You know, it's a balance of talking about documenting and letting everybody know their rich history of winning and how, you know, how we'll probably never see a run for that span in the NFL ever again, especially in a salary cap era. So it is also rewarding and praising the amount of success, but also getting the other part that came with it, right?
Yeah.
The clouds that we got with. So it's a little bit of both. That wasn't me saying a Patriots one to just nothing but to show black eye and black cloud and all this cheating.
You want to see it all.
You want to see it all, right? You want to see the whole entire
that's
story.
That's the beauty of a great documentary.
Years.
It does hit everything.
Yeah. The one that I thought of, and I've told you guys this, I think earlier in the week when I said, if I'm being honest, appreciate, respect, lived the Jordan era. But that's not who I gravitated toward. I told you I was always a huge Charles Barkley fan. That's who I had posters of. That's the shirts that I would wear, especially his time with the Sixers. If you're talking about a fun one, I think a documentary on Charles Barkley's career and life after basketball, just everything surrounding Charles Barkley, you know, his gambling, you know, throwing a guy through the window, you know, his playing career at the end, definitely trying to chase the ring. And His golf swing. I mean, there's a lot of layers to Charles Barkley that I think could be interesting too.
Well, how about just the dynamic that we learned that I didn't know was that he and Michael Jordan don't get along anymore because of something that Charles said on a Charlotte radio station where he just said, hey, I don't think Michael Jordan's doing a really good job as an owner. And that was it.
I think it was
Jordan
when he was a GM.
Shut him out since then.
I think it was back when he was the GM of the Bobcats.
Yeah.
It was basically that he's not doing a good job with
Charles is correct.
Right.
He's not wrong.
And everybody knows it. But
it's
gotten icy since then.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, we will we'll call it a day. It is only Wednesday. Unfortunately, Willie tried to get us to Thursday. It's only Wednesday. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.